This podcast was recorded on Monday, October 28th.
To the KCSU Sports Spooktacular. Welcome to the KCSU Sports Spooktacular.
How's it going, Nick?
It's going pretty good. My name is Nick Baker.
I'm Dixon Lawson.
Dixon Lawson has alluded to. We are here ready to talk about some of the spookiest stuff in all of sports.
Of all sports history.
Everything. And we got a wide arrangement of topics to cover, so we're going to just get down to it. We got some cool stuff to talk about. First, we're going to tell you about some spooky happenings here at KCSU.
Because it is Spooktober.
It is. Yeah. And we're wrapping it up here with this podcast, but don't worry, you can listen to it in November. It won't kill you. Next up, scary trade deals, then scary teams, scary players, and the scary good season for the CSU volleyball team. You can listen to all that here on this episode of the Post Game Bar Tab Sports Spooktacular.
Ooh. Ooh.
So here at KCSU, we got some spooky happenings going on. Of course, we've got the regular sports shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m., where you can hear all kinds of cool sports stuff. But we also cover volleyball, every home game, and every game inside the state of Colorado and Wyoming, including the postseason, is done here at 90.5 KCSU or live at KCSUFM.com. And we've got something new going on. Dixon, you want to tell everyone about the pregame show presented by Old Aggie?
Yeah, so thanks to Old Aggie, we've had a little bit of a partnership with them. On November 2nd, when the CSU Rams will be playing against UNLV at Canvas Stadium, we're going to have a pregame show 3 hours before that kickoff. And thanks to Old Aggie, we're going to have porch passes to be given away. So during that hour pre-show, we're going to be having questions, text-ins, interviews, tons of different things. But more importantly, we're going to be asking you guys questions you can text in. And if you're the lucky winner, you're going to win yourself some porch passes, some sick Aggie swag, as well as just a good, nice, crisp, good job from Nick Baker live.
It's such a good time going to the games, the porch passes, and it's an early game, so it's not going to get cold and dark like last time. Very, very exciting stuff. And you can listen to that, like we said, November 2nd is the next one, and the final one will be against Air Force on November 16th, and that's my bad, actually. That's not the last one. The last one is against a currently ranked team, Boise State, on November 29th. And to find times and all that, you can find us, KCSUFM, on Instagram, and we'll post the times for all that, because the times are still to be determined for a couple of those.
But if you haven't been able to get out to a football game, and you're looking for an excuse to go, what better excuse?
You might win some tickets.
So you're going to have great tickets if you're able to win. You're going to have a great seat in the house. And truly, for the CSU football, it could be a turnaround for them. It could be a very good turnaround game.
Yeah, no, they've won two straight, so who knows? UNLV, Air Force, Wyoming, and Boise State left to play for them. So now in the Spooktacular, it's time to transition to our next topic.
Spooky trade deals, Nick.
Spooky trade deals, Dixon. So it's time to talk about some spooky trades. And we were looking around trying to find a bunch of them, but you know, there's no better trifecta of spooky trades than when you go back to the Miami Marlins a couple years ago, who traded away three all-pro outfielders in the matter of like 1 to 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know why. The Miami Marlins fans don't know why. Nobody knows why. But what they got back is frightening.
And see, for someone who doesn't follow baseball as much as I do, for someone who doesn't follow baseball as much like I do, Nick, go ahead and kind of break that trade down for me.
So there's three different trades. We're going to talk about each one, going from the most important to the least important, in my opinion, of course.
Well, let's hear it. What's your number one?
So the first one is Marcell Ozuna. He got traded to the St. Louis Cardinals from the Miami Marlins. He's not the best player in the league, but he can hit 30 home runs. He can drive in 100 runs. He's quick. He's a good glove in the outfield. He's a great veteran presence.
So would you call him, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but kind of a depth hitter to where the point of he's not necessarily...
Oh, he's better than a depth hitter.
So would you consider him a star?
No.
Okay, so that's what I meant by depth hitter.
He's
not your star.
A tick below a star, okay. But he's not a depth hitter. So he's a heavy hitter,
okay.
But he's not a star per se. He's a big piece on any team. I think he hits 3 on the Cardinals. He's a big piece, and he took them into the postseason this year.
Okay.
He didn't do it alone, of course, but he was a big part of it.
Big piece.
So, yeah. So in that trade... Ozuna came to St. Louis, and what St. Louis gave the Marlins is just horrifying. This is probably the best group of players they brought in out of all three trades, which is also horrifying in its own right. So someone who doesn't follow baseball knows, when trades happen in baseball, generally it's a good player for like 4 or 5 random minor leaguers because they don't do draft pick trades. And the minor leaguers are kind of a hit or miss. Who knows if they're ever going to make it. So Miami got back Sandy Alcantara. Okay. He's a very okay average pitcher. Magnaris Sierra, who is really fast.
Could be a very good pinch hitter.
Yeah.
Pinch runner.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess.
Okay.
I'm just trying to give. He's on anything. The roster there. He shouldn't be on the roster anywhere else.
Okay.
He's really fast. He has some potential. Haven't seen him do anything great. Zach Gallen. Don't know who that is very well. And Daniel Castano, who's not even in the Marlins' top 30 prospects. I don't know why he's included. But neither of them have had any impact on the Marlins whatsoever.
So that whole trade bust.
Yeah, it's a bust. It's the best of the ones.
Right.
Next up is Giancarlo Stanton. Okay. He's...
I've actually heard this name before. That's when you know he's a bigger name.
Yeah, he's won an MVP title.
Yeah.
So Stanton gets traded to the Yankees to make contracts work because there is no salary cap, but they don't want to pay just a ton of money for no reason.
Right.
They acquired Starlin Castro, who's pretty good. Best player on the Marlins, middle of the pack on most teams.
Okay.
So they acquire Starlin Castro and prospects Jose Devers and Jorge Guzman. Neither of them have done anything much. Haven't heard much of them in the minor leagues. They also retained retained $30 million of Stanton's salary.
Which I feel like that's where the scariness comes in. Because you at least got one decent player back.
Yeah.
Right?
He's all right, yeah. But when you're trading away all your star, there's almost no reason to have him. So it's not only you gave away your best player for, almost pennies.
But then you also
paid for it.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like, it would make sense if maybe they were getting another star talent and they were saying, okay, we'll pay for our star's contract if you give us yours.
Right.
But they weren't doing that.
No. It's like you're just paying to essentially lose your star. And those two prospects, Jorge Guzman and Devers, they have potential to be all right. They haven't done anything yet, and it's a very big gamble to take on just two prospects.
It could be a very long-term play.
Yeah,
though,
it could.
But I don't see it
as of right now, a couple of years down the line, nothing has come from it.
And what's that third one?
The third one is Christian Yelich, who is an MVP candidate perennially. He just hurt his knee horribly just before the postseason. But outside of that, he's had two phenomenal seasons for the Brewers, really turned their club around. They're now a contender every year in a very competitive NL Central. And the Marlins acquired in that Isan Diaz, Jordan Yamamoto, and Monte Harrison, all prospects that haven't really done much. Yamamoto's pitched a little in the majors, hasn't been great. And Lewis Brinson was the big piece that they acquired. Huge prospect who was forced into a starter role a little early. He bat well under 200 for most of the year. I think he finished under 200. If not, he was very close to 200.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great hitter. Pretty okay defender. That's about it right now. He has potential to get good. Hasn't gotten good in 2 years.
See, and from a fan base, that's a trade that would make me want to pull my hair out.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't anything, there isn't anything to be positive about.
Yeah.
The only good
Brinson
part of that
could be real good, but at best, he's going to be what Yelich was.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, even if you were looking pure prospects, there wasn't enough there to in my opinion, make it worth it.
So, in the very rare chance he becomes his ceiling, what he should like at most be, he'll be what Yelich was. So why are you setting yourself back to acquire a couple of random no-name prospects?
You know, I have no explanation. Scary. Yeah, I have no explanation.
Scary trades.
Definitely scary. But I would agree that even though it's a couple years ago, definitely one of the scariest trades I'd heard of in all sports.
Yeah, no, it's not good. And three of them in the same offseason. So we're going to move on to our next subject. Scary teams. So we're going to talk scary good and scary bad, because sometimes you're like, ooh, that's pretty scary. I don't want to mess with that. And sometimes you're like, ooh, that's pretty scary.
I don't want to go near that.
I don't want to go near that.
Nah. Yeah. Either way, though. So let's start off. We're going to start in the NFL. And this one, we had one definite and then a lot of questionable. So we'll start with the team that I think everyone can agree with. The Patriots, they're the scariest team.
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, did you see what they did to the Jets?
The dead.
Yeah.
You know,
Tom Brady should be done.
He'll resurrect any career. He'll make careers. He's you know, like a mad scientist, and he's like, bring me a random no-name. Bring me a 40-year-old. Whatever. I'm going to turn him into a star. And he's puppeteering this ageless wonder that is Tom Brady, and it's frightening.
Well, I was going to say, you talked about CSU being like receiver university.
Yeah.
It almost seems like the Patriots is like, hey, if you want to be a star, come here. It's Star University.
Yeah, we're gonna make you good. You're gonna leave. You're gonna sign a huge contract and be a disappointment wherever you go.
It's great coaching either way. But then we're looking on the other side of it. The bad teams. The one we did like officially decide on was the Bengals.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other teams.
So I decided on the Bengals over the Dolphins for one big reason. The Dolphins have a future. They have a couple of prospects and a ton of picks.
For me, it's also the Dolphins did beat the Patriots last year, which in itself is enough for me to say they're not the worst team in the NFL.
Well, yeah, and so they're both winless. But like I said, there's future prospect in Miami versus if you look on the other side, the Bengals have almost nothing. They have a bunch of old players that no one's interested in, a bunch of trade pieces that no one's really interested in, but they need to trade, and they don't have a ton of picks coming up.
And that's the scary spot for really any team. When you don't have picks coming up, you can't get prospects. And guess what? No team, just like we've seen with the Patriots, they can't live forever.
No.
They eventually are going to need new talent.
Right.
And so you look at a team with the Bengals where they don't have a ton of talent.
Right.
You need to start really hitting big with these picks.
Yeah. No, I could see the Dolphins doing what the 49ers have done this year, where all those first-round picks have slowly, all of a sudden, blossomed at the same time into an amazing defense or whatever it may be. But the Bengals have nothing, and that's horrifying.
Definitely. I agree. And then we're going to... what are some of the other teams? So we said Dolphins. One other team I wanted to throw in the mix, the Jets.
Yeah, the Jets. So they're kind of like the Browns in the respect that everyone was like, oh, the Browns are going to be really good this year. No. And everyone's like, hey, the Jets aren't going to be the worst team in the division this year. No.
No.
They, outside of the Dolphins.
This is the week that they come out with something.
Right.
No.
Yeah, it's like, no, quarterback's sick. No. Going to trade away the star, Leonard Williams.
Nope. Seeing ghosts.
Yeah, see and go. No.
Okay, really quick sidebar. Did you see that the Jacksonville mascot dressed up as a ghost? Talk about, like, lol.
Yeah.
Just lol cow right there.
It's super funny. So shifting gears into another league, one thing that kind of scares me for the NBA, there isn't really a clear-cut best team or a clear-cut worst team.
See, that's something that personally I enjoy about the NBA
now. Oh, I love it too, yeah.
Yeah, is because you look around other sports and you're like, man, here's your best teams. Baseball.
Yeah, it's so top
Yankees,
heavy.
Astros.
And it used to be that way in the NBA until all of a sudden
literally
the
one
era
year
of the super team is gone. Now it's two-headed monster, two-headed monster, two-headed monster, two-headed monster, team effort, two-headed monster, team effort.
It's a lot of stars. So we used to see Golden State have every star. And now we see most teams having 2 to 3 star talent, high-paid players, and then a bunch of talent around them.
Yeah, a very nice cast around them. And it's really cool. And when you look at the smaller teams, the ones that are, you know, you would say are the scary bad teams, the Hawks, ton of potential there. The Suns, ton of potential there. Ton of picks, ton of youth. And that's really exciting for me.
Oh, I definitely agree.
Yeah.
I think that with the NBA, they're also, and we talked about this a few times, maybe on a few shows, but they're very progressive.
Yeah, very.
They don't want the league to become stagnant, which we've seen in a lot of other
And it's
sports,
so different than other leagues.
Yeah, and it's something that definitely brings me closer to the NBA, or like wants me, I want to follow it more. But now we look over into the baseball realm, and we kind of touched on it, you know.
So baseball, the World Series going on, going strong. One of the scary teams is in there. So the Yankees and the Astros are the scary teams. I would say the Yankees are scary for offense because they have so many high-paid, big power guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the Astros are scary for pitching because three-headed monster.
And, you know, that's something that they've been talking about so far in the World Series. The couple of games that I've caught is that it's, you know, it doesn't matter what pitcher's on the mound for the Astros. They literally have so much talent in their bullpen. They can just keep rolling through starters night after night. But then you look on the other side, when you have a dominant hitting core, what's more important, pitching or hitting? Which team becomes the better team just based on what's more important in baseball, to your opinion?
You know, with all the high offense teams out there, pitching's probably more important because if you can limit that, no one else can really do that.
And you, at the end of the day, if the pitcher can strike out every single batter, it doesn't matter what kind of a hitting core you have.
Yeah. The defense wins championships, offense sells tickets.
Yep. You know what? And so I think that the Astros are the better team overall just because of the pitching aspect. You know, but then what about some of the worst teams?
So it was hard to say anyone but the Marlins. There's teams like the Orioles where you're like, oh. There's teams like the White Sox where, oh, but they have some future in those teams.
Right.
The Marlins, we talked about them in the scary trades. They sold their future a couple years ago. They sell their future all the time, and they don't bring much back. And it's a scary place for free agents to want to go. And there's no sunshine there.
Definitely.
You know, there's literal sunshine, but no metaphorical sunshine.
And that's, I guess, the hardest part is, let's say you are a prospect and you get drafted by the Marlins.
Yeah.
Is that somewhere that you want to go? Or are you just the whole time going to be thinking, I want out? And you may not even play your best because...
Well, if you're a prospect, you're thinking, hey, I'm probably going to get to play pretty darn soon.
That's
and hopefully
true.
I can prove my worth and get the heck out of here.
So if you're ready for it, I guess it's maybe the place to go.
Yeah.
I don't know. Either way, I think it's just baseball is such a tough sport because you could have a star pitcher and then one game, it's just your shoulder slips and then you're done. Right?
It's like rough.
The season-ending injuries is so much bigger in baseball, I feel like.
Oh, 100%. Pretty scary. Pretty scary.
Looking over at the NHL, though, one last sport we're going to touch on. Some of the best teams, if you look just at... What do you say is the best team? Legacy or how they're starting so far in the season? Like we...
You know, the season's pretty young, but I'd say how they're... A combination of how they've started the season with if it looks like they can sustain it.
So for I guess for me personally, I would have to say the Capitals, the Bruins, the Sabres, and even though a lot of people are gonna say it's just gonna offend the Avs.
I mean the Avs were one of the longest undefeated teams. I think the longest.
They went the longest, then they did eventually get a loss.
Yeah.
But they also have one of the best prospect cores in hockey.
Yeah.
A lot
they
of
were
teams
bad for a long time.
We had one of the worst seasons ever in hockey.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, and then they bounced back, make it to the championship or to the playoffs. Excuse me. But most teams don't have the cap space and the prospect depth that the Avs do. We have, I think it's like roughly about 17, between 11 and 17 million, because I don't know the number exactly, to spend this year.
Yeah.
We just signed Rantanen. You know, we have a bunch of players still on rookie deals. McKinnon, Landeskog, they're all locked up. There's a lot of depth there that's locked up. So I think they're a team that could definitely make a run for it. But you look over like the Capitals, Ovechkin, he's just deadly. It doesn't matter.
It's difficult to pass them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But taking a look at maybe some of the worst teams in the NHL.
Yeah, there's a clear-cut worst.
Ottawa Senators.
Yeah.
They are worse than even when the Avs were bad because the Avs were bad for one season.
Yeah, the Senators have just shot themselves in the foot so many times, like the Marlins.
It's a lot of management, but I guess that's the thing we've noticed with a lot of these teams.
Yeah.
It's management decisions. And so you almost wonder if, I wish these teams would look back and say, maybe management needs to change.
Yeah.
Because I think that's where it needs to start for a lot of bad teams.
Yeah, well, some scary management out there. Maybe that's for next year. You'll have to find out.
Yeah, that could be a good one.
Yeah. In the meantime, we're going to talk scary players coming up in just a second. Scary players.
These are some of the people, I guess personally, like when I played sports, you don't want to see people like this.
Yeah, they're rats.
Yeah.
You know? And so, honestly, I was a bit of a rat myself. You know what I mean?
You have to be a little bit.
Yeah, so as an undersized lineman, I was 5'10" playing on the line.
Right.
You have to have a reason that they shouldn't run at you. They have to have a reason that you know, you're scary out there. Also, you know, in other sports, the enforcer position is a thing.
Hockey's a big one.
It's not as much anymore.
It's
sort of dissolved, but it is still a thing. And one of these guys on this list is a pretty much enforcer, which is pretty cool in a sport that you don't usually see it. I'm going to start with him. So Zaza Pachulia. We didn't write him down on our planning. Zaza Pachulia is essentially an enforcer for the Warriors. Now he's on the Pistons, I believe. He is a guy who will go out there and he will rough you up pretty good on a shooting foul, quote, but he's, you know, it's brutal. And there's a couple other guys in that category like Draymond Green and Jared Dudley. They'll fight guys. They will literally throw a punch if it comes down to it.
And I feel like anymore in the NBA, it's not necessarily one person's the enforcer. Yeah. There's a lot of players that would talk some smack.
Yeah. And those are the guys who will actually walk the walk and talk the talk.
Exactly. And so then that normally entices a punch to come out, right. Something like that. Whereas, you know, you look more in football, dirty players are people who have no regard for the safety of the players around them.
And right now, that's Montez Perfect.
I've always had kind of, I was raised more old-timey, so I'm all about the big hits. But
he plays rough and dirty.
But I do have a fine line because I don't ever want to see a player have to go out on a career-ending injury or just become literally unconscious on the field.
So I'm in the same boat where I'm like, oh, what a hit. Oh, he's going to have to, you know, take a minute on the sideline to recuperate.
It's like, oh, he's not getting up.
Like, oh, you dislocated his kneecap. That's not fun anymore.
You've blindside blocked him and his arms are locked out and he's no longer responsive.
You suplexed that guy.
Right.
And he might have broken his neck if you were a little, you know, more rough with him. Not fun anymore.
No.
That's scary. You need to take it down. Take about 10% off over there, Vontez.
Looking at hockey, you know, we actually have an enforcer position. Brad Marchand has always been known as the Rat.
It's sort of dissolved a little bit in the last year. Not for Marchand. In the last couple of years,
gotcha.
The enforcer position's kind of gone away. But Brad Marchand, he's still a rat.
He's just dirty.
Yeah.
Some of the things he does or has done, and if you have maybe seen him, he'll go up and trip players behind the skate after a play's over. He'll just go reach with a stick and yank someone's skates out.
Yeah.
Like, those are the kind of plays that you're looking to make someone upset, and it's kind of the same way as you'd say in basketball, talking smack, but it's that could hurt somebody.
But you're maybe going to end someone's career if something goes wrong.
Yeah, those always have those what-if moments.
Yeah, another guy out there, Manny Machado, who really doesn't care a lot of the time.
Kind of like a bad boy personality.
Yeah, and he'll slide, he'll spike you with his cleats every now and then. And also, he just took so much money from the Padres. What a mean guy.
That is definitely a very mean thing to do.
This is a pretty short and succinct thing. Anyone who's listening to a spooktacular podcast probably knows one of the players we mentioned and knows them, knows it's true that they are the boogeyman of their sport.
Definitely. When we come back, though, we're going to wrap up with CSU volleyball and their spooky, amazing season.
Ooh, volleyball, it's spooky.
I mean, 18 or 19-1 now?
They're 20-1.
Oh, I missed another game. Exactly, 21's pretty spooky, is what I was trying to say.
It's so spooky.
19 straight wins?
And they've won, 19 straight. And of course, like we said earlier, this podcast recorded on the 28th of October. They're 20-1 at the time, 10-0 in conference, and they've won 19 in a row. Haven't lost on the road, haven't lost on a neutral court.
But the kind of scariest part is they haven't lost anywhere but at home.
Yeah, they've lost one game at home, and it's to a team that is currently ranked right now.
Well, so are we, as we are ranked number 14 in the nation.
Yeah, but that's a good loss.
Okay, I'm not disagreeing with it. Like, it is a good loss.
When they rank teams, they say, is that a good win or a good loss, or is that a bad win or a bad loss? So, for example, when you beat a team like Utah State, who's 2-17 at the time,
bad win.
That's a bad win. It doesn't really do anything to your ranking. But if you beat, you know, a team like Creighton, who at this time is ranked 9, that's a good win. So you're going to move up a lot.
Definitely.
Versus, so if you lose to a team like Utah State, that's a bad loss. So you're going to lose a lot of credit. But if you lose to a team like Creighton, you're hardly going to lose anything because they're ranked higher than you. They're a good team. And one of you had to lose.
Yeah, exactly. But you look at some of the players and some of the keys of this season. Katie Oleksak, the kind of, I would say, captain of the offense, captain of the defense.
Yeah.
Because wherever the points come, she normally gets it there. She gets the ball where it needs to go for the kill.
Yeah, yeah, no, the leadership as well is something not to underestimate, and she's definitely done a good job of that. Her and Runnels, the two of them have been leaders offensively, versus, you know, there are leaders defensively like Romeliotis, and there is a leader just in general like Nicholson and Oleksak, and the team is just full of leadership and seniority.
Well, I wouldn't even, to me, it's not really leadership anymore. Yeah. You definitely have those seniors who can help in leadership scenarios, but for the most part, it's just a team.
It is a
team. They truly play as a group of players that they're all best friends, whether or not that's true or not.
Yeah, it's almost like hive mind at that point. You were all just on the same page.
And it's how it appears. And you can see that because some of the games I've called, some of the games I've seen, these long winded rallies, they are never out of position because they work so well together. They know where to be.
Very well.
Something super spooky. I was thinking about Katie Oleksak's little fake set.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the spookiest plays to see.
Well, and you don't want to have to worry about her because you're worried about Jess Jackson. You're worried about Breonna Runnels.
Christy
you're worried
Hillier.
About Hillier and Hogard Jensen as you know, the other team. And you don't need to have to think, well, what if the setter gets us? You don't want to have to think that because every time you're like, wait, is she going to do it? Nope, it's too late. Christy Hillier is currently 9 feet over your head slamming it down.
But as soon as you don't remember, she's
and
like,
she's gonna hit you. And right over.
Yeah. You know, talking about Christy Hillier, one of the most amazing plays for me, she jumped up in the air to get a kill on this ball, and the ball kind of traveled or sailed a little bit on her. She was able to almost just like stay in midair, and she just corrected her arm from behind her to above her and just was able to hit it perfectly. And it was like, that was after she had already realized I missed the first one, just purely because of the way it was set.
Yeah.
She recorrected and was able to still get the kill. It's plays like
great,
that.
Great players find a way to make a play. They find, it seems like they always just slow down the play to whatever time suits them to make the play they need to.
And, you know, talking about, what about scary coaching? Coach Hilbert has, you know, just listening to him talk to us in the post shows, you can hear the knowledge that he has, but then you see it on the court.
No, you should have seen when I mentioned so the last game that I called was on Saturday. And I don't know if you know the stat, Dixon. In the first two sets alone, CSU had an individual attack error. Just one.
Yep.
Just one.
Yep.
Seven on the night, and six of them were in the last set when Coach Hilbert tried something experimental. He told us in the postgame, I tried a different lineup just to see what would happen.
And you know, I was producing that game, and I wanted to say something, but I didn't know who had the headset on.
Yeah.
He talked about that. He did that against when I called the game against San Jose State.
Yeah. He's trying experimental things because he knows his team is so good, even if there's a problem and
he already
goes
has
wrong,
a plan.
And you're down 10-0. Your team can come back because they're that good, and he has faith in them.
Well, the other thing I like about having the different rotations is now we're getting closer to tournament play. These teams are gonna have seen what made you a 19 winning streak straight team.
Right.
They're gonna see these things. So having a different almost plan to throw at a team when they plan for just one rotation.
You have to.
You can win the games.
Absolutely. So that's all we've got here from the post-game bar tab. Spooktacular! If you want to hear more sports, you can tune into any home CSU volleyball game or in the state of Colorado. You can also tune into the sports shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m. or listen 3 hours before any home kickoff for the Old Aggie pregame show. Only here on 90.5 KCSU FM. Listen live at kcsufm.com. I'm Nick Baker, here with Dixon Lawson, and you've just been spooked by sports. We'll be right back.